Good morning, I'm Elizabeth Harrison in Providence. A handful of GOP activists from Rhode Island are in Boston for a regional meeting of the National Republican Committee that wraps up today. As Rhode Island Public Radio's political reporter Ian Donis reports, the get-together offers a strategic opportunity for local Republicans, a party that has struggled in recent years.
The Rhode Islanders in Boston include State GOP Chairman Mark Smiley, Dave Talon of the Providence GOP, and Cranston Mayor Alan Fung. Fung, who is Chinese-American, says the regional meeting offers a good opportunity to share ideas and to make new acquaintances.
For me, it's been a great opportunity networking, too, because I've had the opportunity to meet fellow Asians that are elected officials that are Republicans in the Northeast area, particularly a couple from Boston area.
Fung says Republicans need to do a better job of connecting with voters to bolster their standing in the Northeast. As it stands, the GOP has a meager presence in elected office across New England. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Rhode Island's jobless rate edged up slightly in July from 8.8% to 8.9%. It's a source of frustration for state Labor Department officials who concede that at the current rate, it will take several years for Rhode Island to get anywhere close to full employment. With more on the latest numbers, here's Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick.
Led by a sharp drop in the number of temporary jobs, Rhode Island's jobless rate posted a 0.1% increase in July. Still, the 8.9% rate is 1.6% lower than a year ago. The number of Rhode Island-based jobs fell by 900 last month. Even more concerning was the number of Rhode Islanders in the labor force. That figure fell by 2,400, possibly because of mass retirements. Charles Fogarty, director of the State Department of Labor and Training, concedes that Rhode Island employment could take years to return to pre-recession levels.
Full employment flow is usually identified by economists as somewhere around 5.2%. So we're looking, at several more years before we get to full employment.
The biggest loser in the July jobs report was professional and business services, a sector which shed 1,300 jobs. Healthcare, construction, and transportation posted smaller job declines. Employment gains were reported in eight other sectors, led by retail trade and arts and entertainment. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Rhode Island's top sheriff says it appears normal steps were taken to serve a temporary restraining order against a man now facing murder charges. A preliminary inquiry shows a deputy knocked on several doors, checked names on mailboxes, and tried to call a cell phone number to reach Daniel Rodriguez. His former girlfriend requested the restraining order because he had threatened to kill her. Rodriguez has now been charged with shooting and killing that former girlfriend and her daughter. After the shooting, he allegedly kidnapped a 2-year-old boy who was later found wandering alone in Providence. And there's more financial assistance coming to Rhode Island from the federal government to help in the continuing recovery from Hurricane Sandy. The U.S. Department of Labor says the newest financial aid is a $500,000 national emergency grant. The money will help fund the cleaning up of beaches and other public lands damaged by Sandy and also provide temporary jobs to help with the storm recovery. The storm brought the most damage to Bristol, Kent, Newport, and Washington counties in the Ocean State.
Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, educator, physician, and community activist Pablo Rodriguez. We should also note he's a member of our board here at Rhode Island Public Radio. Thanks for joining us, Pablo.
Saludos, amigos.
Mediation is continuing after a series of public employee unions sued in an attempt to undo the overhaul of the state pension system in 2011. Scott, what's your sense of whether the two sides will be able to reach a settlement that addresses the union's concerns while making the pension fund more sustainable?
Well, this has turned into sort of like the Paris peace talks, if you remember the Vietnam War era back in the 60s of Rhode Island. One thing I do know is that this is a preview of the 2014 governor's race. If General Treasurer Raimondo wants to push this to trial and Governor Chafee decides it's time for settlement, which will be a very interesting legal development.
How do you see this, Pablo? Do you think it's possible that this very politically freighted matter, as Scott notes, will be resolved in any way before the 2014 gubernatorial race.
I think it'll be resolved. But what will happen, though, is like Scott says, it's going to be an election issue, especially for the primary in the Democratic Party between Raimondo and Chafee and Angel Taveras. The interesting thing is that the pension has been awarded by a number of very conservative groups and are only pointing to Treasurer Raimondo as the architect, even though Chafee was part of this reform, at least in its initial aspects. The state has received the 11th annual hedge fund industry award for being a good plan. And ALEC, the association of legislative conservative legislative group, gave it an A, you know, like an award for being a model that the rest of the country should follow. So this is going to be a very, very important issue in the primary.
How about it, Maureen? Rhode Island was praised for moving forward with its most significant overhaul in many years of the state pension system, and now might this be undone by this process in court?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a very deep political situation, because what we fail to mention here is that in order for any settlement to go through, the legislature is going to have to pass another law. And there is where the rub is, because it will be very difficult for the leadership to get the members of the legislature, given an election, to support a reconfiguration that probably will involve more taxpayer money, that probably will possibly alienate some of the existing workers. And so it's a complex political question that involves the assembly. And that may be the driving force that prevents this kind of negotiation and a successful settlement. It may get bumped up to the courts because of this.
A new 10-cent toll is set to begin Monday on the Saconnet River Bridge connecting Tiverton and Portsmouth. Drivers will be liable for the toll, but the state authority that oversees the bridge is holding off for now on setting a policy. Maureen, is this essentially a way of punishing the people who've been proactive by getting easy passed? Does this policy make sense to you?
Well, it only makes sense in the sense that it is a placeholder. They're not serious about this toll. The idea that they can't even afford to collect it because it would cost more money than to get the 10 cents. It'll be an interesting case study in terms of honor and people's responsibility. But really what's going on here is they expect to make the easy pass people pay it if they leave the sticker up. Otherwise, they just want to hold a place, and they're going to be dealing with this issue in a much more significant way, with much more significant levies in the future.
Pablo, we know the General Assembly imposed this toll after initially scrapping it and then finding out that not having a toll could preclude the possibility of ever having one on the Saconnet River Bridge. Why doesn't the state have a more proactive approach to meeting its needs for keeping up the maintenance of bridges?
Because no one wants to pay. I mean, it's the bottom line. And the bridge is going to fall down. I mean, this is something that we have to be responsible about. And I believe to have a policy that is unenforceable, to actually announce a toll that no one will pay, it's like not doing anything. I mean, this is really a joke. And anybody, you know, looking at this in a serious way can't possibly, you know, support continuing this lack of investment in the infrastructure of our state. The bridge will fall down if we don't fix it.
What do you make of this frittata, Scott? And actually, we should make clear that it's not the Saconnet River Bridge that needs maintenance right now, but it's being seen as a way to fund maintenance for other bridges that are older. Go ahead, Scott.
You know, the General Assembly fumbled the ball here. They've got to make a policy decision. Is bridge maintenance and upkeep, is it a user fee issue for the people who drive over these bridges, or are all of us in Rhode Island in this together, and our bridges, infrastructure, and repairing them ought to be financed by general revenues? In other words, people in Burrville will contribute as much as people in Tiverton.
Roman Catholic Bishop Thomas Tobin of Providence revealed this week he's switched his party affiliation from Democrat to Republican. Tobin says he was very disappointed with the 2010 Democratic National Convention, as well as the more recent legalization of same-sex marriage in Rhode Island. Scott, how do you think this resonates for Catholics in Rhode Island?
I don't have a clue, but I will tell you the strange thing about it is all of the Senate Republicans voted for gay marriage, as did House Republican leader Brian Newberry. And what strikes me here is the bishop injecting himself so much into a partisan political aspect of this, going to the Republican Party, speaking to them. This is something that most clergy people don't do. They will make their views known on the issue, and then they will not get involved deeply in the partisan thing. The other thing you have to understand here is, what's a cafeteria Catholic? Basically, it's a Congregationalist. And I don't think that Catholics like this, but the bishop has to understand, and I think all Catholics, if you think only Protestant Jews and atheists are getting abortions in this state, well, let me tell you, you don't know Pablo Rodriguez and the people he used to deal with at Planned Parenthood. I mean, I think there's a lot of Catholic women out there. If you think no Catholic women take birth control pills and then go to Mass, I think you believe in Santa Claus.
What do you say, Maureen?
Well, I say that, I mean, this was a big loss for Tobin. He had put sort of his prestige on the line, and I think this is a way of sort of saying to particularly Catholic legislators, you know, in the state assembly, you've let us down, and maybe there'd be some pushback politically. But the point is that I would respectfully disagree with the bishop when he said that the First Amendment was there to keep the state out of the church, but he said not the other way around, if I read his remarks correctly. Indeed, it is to keep the church out of the state. And while he has every right to announce his political affiliation, he has a tax-exempt status. And to the extent that he has to maintain that as the head of a religious organization, I think he has to walk a fine line here in terms of not interfering with the political process.
All right, let's get Pablo in. And as Scott referenced, we should note that you've traditionally been a strong supporter of Planned Parenthood and abortion rights in Rhode Island, and the bishop is certainly on the other side of that issue.
It brings back memories of when the former bishop wanted to excommunicate all politicians that would vote for legislation to increase abortion rights in the state. So I'm wondering what's going to happen now with all these Republican politicians that voted for gay marriage. Are they going to suffer the same threats that those suffered in the past?
We're running short on time here, but it's worth noting that how, after years of criticism of mandatory sentencing for drug crimes, the Justice Department is starting to move away from that policy. Scott, why has it taken so long?
I can't figure it out why it took so long. I think you have to go back to the 90s and 80s, the Reagan, the crackdowns, the Rockefeller Law in New York. Crime rates were higher then. A lot of people thought that it was fueled by drugs. I think also there's a racial element here, and we have to understand that we incarcerate more people than the rest of the world combined.
I think we're finally realizing that the policies we've had have failed. We have a lot of experiments in different states, and I think we're moving toward an enlightened and better policy vis-a-vis the criminal justice system and drugs.
5% of the population of the world, we have 25% of the incarcerated population in the world. It is a failure, and it was about time that we fixed it.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable, Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Pablo Rodriguez.
Gracias, amigos.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.